it'll come in handy when we start developing, you know, the algorithms, for example, the recursion relations or anything else you might want to program yourself. And so really want to give an idea of how Mathematica thinks about things versus how well we normally do. That'll help us pick apart expressions, filter them, you know, change them and modify them in an important symbolic way. I mean, one of the really important advantages of Mathematica, and the reason why sometimes it's, so if you're into really hardcore computing, Mathematica is an extremely high-level language. It's so high-level that almost everything in Mathematica is an object. You can have anything become anything you'd like. There are very, very few symbols that are protected or locked, like I, for the imaginary unit. But because of that, it means that you can have functions manipulate functions with arbitrary degrees of recursion, and this leads to really, really powerful algorithmic structures. But also it allows you to program in a way that you think. This is one of the, you know, it's typically said that objective computing languages let you work the way you think. But that's not quite true in most objective languages. Whereas in Mathematica, you really can. You want to define some arbitrary symbol, you know, just call it whatever you want. If you want it to act in some particular way, there's usually a way to have Mathematica manipulate formulas the same way you do. And that makes it very powerful. Okay, so, but to begin, I want to emphasize the way that, two forms of functions, and so I'm going to call a standard expression, any expression in Mathematica of the form function with square brackets and arguments separated by commas. Now, it turns out that every single expression in Mathematica is thought of by Mathematica in that way. But it's not true that we input all formulas in that form. We'll see lots of examples. But this is the standard form. And knowing that every function you write, including, you know, plus sign and you know, minus sign, stuff like that, are always translated by Mathematica internally into this form, the function with the, with square brackets, you know, that'll help us understand picking apart expressions in a really detailed way. So in this thing, the head of this, so this is called the, you know, x, y, z. The head is the outermost thing of the function. And it's also the same as the zeroth part, which is the top level. So we can say part zero. And that'll tell you what the outermost wrapping thing of the function is. In case you're really into to programming Mathematica, it is worth knowing that there are actually deeper levels of beyond just these normal functions, but which you can see by going to things like show expression to get the whole cell notebook things, including all formatting stuff. But for our purposes, this is enough. Okay, but now part has a much more commonly used. So part is the standard form for this function part, but you're probably more used to seeing it in a different way, which is that. So these double brackets, which you saw a lot of yesterday, is equivalent to the form part. So if we do that, we get the head of the expression. So this works on any expression. You can just take the zeroth part of it, and you'll get its head. And it's also what you'll get from if you do tree form or something. Now, it's important to know that even things like that are even when you might not think that you have something of the form function with arguments, there's some expressions in Mathematica that are atomic. Like what is that? It doesn't look like an expression of that form. And if you ask it for full form, it won't change, you know, the way it writes. But it does have a head. Okay? And its head is symbol. And so in Mathematica, the head of an atomic object, something like a number, tells you what type it is. And that's useful to know. And it's also useful to know what Mathematica thinks a particular symbol means. So, for example, the head of 1 is an integer. The head of, if you put a point there, changes it into a real number. Okay? That means that it's treated differently in Mathematica than 1. Okay. The head of something like some rational thing is rational. And the head of 1 plus I is complex. Okay? And so if you want to pick out particular parts of expressions, we'll talk about patterns later on, and these are things that, these are the heads that you can put on patterns to pick out integers in some expression, or the real numbers in some expression, or rational or complex. Okay. So, and the standard form of any expression can be always pulled out by full form. And Pedro gave some great examples of this yesterday. So if you take some expression that is human readable, like with plus signs and stars and, you know, exponents that are written in some pretty way, full form will always rip it or break it down into what Mathematica thinks it is. So its power is the outermost thing. The head of this is power. And then it's times, w, and then plus that. And a good way of seeing what these things are, you know, the way Mathematica thinks about it is with tree form. So we saw this yesterday, and it was pretty useful to think about how Mathematica breaks it apart. And because every single expression in Mathematica is written in this uniform way, and in particular has the connectivity of a tree graph, it means that every single sub-expression of arbitrary type, right, has a unique location, has a unique address that you can access through the function part that we saw above. But now, if you have something in full form, you might want to bring it back into other forms. And so Mathematica translates these things into more human-readable forms, like standard or input or traditional. And you can see the differences. So standard form looks like the way we input it, roughly. It got rid of the star and made it into a space. Stars and spaces are equivalent here. And spaces are interpreted as stars when it could be times. Traditional form, you notice it has some more pretty formatting. Okay, and then input form is this with all the more explicit detail. So you have the times, and you also have the caret instead for the exponent. Okay, and again, so the head of this thing is power, because that's the topmost thing of the tree. If you did full form, it's the outermost. It's the outermost function. Okay, and just as a useful, you know, side, if you look at this tree form, the number of leaves, the number of vertices in this tree graph is counted by leaf count, and that's a good measure of complexity of a function. So the leaf count of this formula is 12, which means, and we should count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. So there are 12 leaves in this formula. And it's a measure of complexity that's used by a lot of functions, including full simplify or something. Full simplify has a few other metrics as well. But the main metric is that it on every single sub-expression, keeps going. And if it can find some operation which reduces the leaf count, it does it. And it keeps doing that. And full simplify does that recursively until it can't reduce the leaf count at all. And then it stops. But simplify just does it once for each sub-expression. Okay. So just as a side note, we're now well past this in the school. But things like, common mathematic mistakes are, you have to, every single function always has a square bracket. Square brackets are very important in Mathematica. And so a common mistake might be to use parentheses. Now, notice that Mathematica is like yelling at you because it put the red parentheses there. It says you really shouldn't mean that. You probably don't mean that. The way it interprets this expression is actually pi times some symbol sign. And even though symbol is a built-in function, this sign is a built-in function which is defined for an argument, sign without any square brackets attached to it is an arbitrary symbol. You could plot sine of x or sine of sine if you wanted. It's just some arbitrary unknown symbol. And you can check it. I think so. Let's see. I'm sure it'll yell at us, but let's see. Okay, so it can do it. and it did yell at me. It said it's protected, but it didn't care that it was protected. So. Okay. That's, by the way, another useful thing, this little message window. I usually keep it hidden because I usually don't want to see what it has to say. but that's because it's always just yelling at me. Okay. In fact, actually, it's because I don't like to see it, its presence, I usually close it, because then it reopens whenever I need to see it. So its existence is like a sign for me if I'm doing something wrong. But you can check that that's the way it's interpreting the symbol, because by using full form. If you look at this expression, full form of sine of pi is times pi, which then times the symbol sine. Okay. So what the output of full form is what I'm going to be calling standard expressions. And every single thing, even, you know, ones that you would never use, like times, always have full forms of that. Well, I sometimes use times, but that's because I'm unusual. Most people would never use times as a function. But it's useful to know that there is a function called times. Okay, so the most standard, most typical non-standard forms for expressions is this infix notation, which is where instead of writing function with square brackets and commas, you write each of the arguments separated by some new symbol. And it turns out you can define any function to have this infixed notation, but usually people don't. And I sympathize. I'm not a big fan of infixed notation. But a lot of the built-in functions are this way, and it's useful to think of them, think of this as an unusual form for that, even though you rarely see the left-hand, you know, the standard form. Okay, so let's just give some common examples of infixed mathematical notation. Things like, you know, really standard ones, like times, okay? That's always, the symbol for the infix is the star, and times, but you can always use times as well. So, and you'll see that that's what Mathematica thinks it is by, you know, x times y times z, and we've full form, you know, so it says times. Okay, and it's the same if we had put spaces in instead of the stars. Okay, it also thinks it's times. Okay. Another one is, another example is plus. Okay, so let's do x plus y plus z. It thinks it's plus. But an interesting counterexample, this x minus y is not a, let's see what that is. So that is plus y times minus 1. Okay? Now that's useful because it's useful to know because if you have a large sum of many things and some of them are negative or positive, it doesn't matter. You can pick out each term, whether it's positive or negative, so this is term one. Let's see. So the first part is just x. The second part is minus y. And if we wanted to get the y, we would be 2 comma 2 y. The first part of 2 is minus 1. Okay. More common infix notation, and ones that you see almost exclusively, are the functorial ones, the ones that define what functions are and define actions for Mathematica, like set. So when you see an equal sign in Mathematica, you could have always written, instead of writing x equals y, you could say set x comma y. Notice, by the way, that these are the first of many functions in Mathematica that we've seen here, of these infixed functions, which are very, very non-abelian, okay? Set x, y, take, its first argument is very different than the second one. It defines x to be y, okay? And similarly for all the other structures that we've already seen, okay? And the same goes for all of the other functorial things that we saw before. So the colon equals is just set delayed. The arrow is rule, and actually, and rule comes in handy. We'll see examples of that later, and rule delayed as well. Okay, more common things to see in infix notation, probably more common than others. Equals is this two equals thing. So whenever you see the symbol with two equal signs, it's just another way of writing the function equals. So you can always say equal, you know, x, y. And the way it returns, see, it actually spat out, it prefers this notation for printing. Although its full form is equal, okay? And notice that it returned the function that I asked unevaluated. It doesn't know whether or not x equals y. This is really useful to know because it means that Mathematica remains agnostic about anything it doesn't actually, it's completely sure about. And this also means that equals is a little bit weaker than what we might have wanted. Maybe we wanted to see whether or not x was exactly the same as y, as symbolically. And there's another function we'll see in a moment, same q, that checks that. But so this is why, so x equals 1, it returns x equals 1. It doesn't know what that means. And, okay, so we can put that one there. Okay. But it's useful to know that it doesn't behave, a few things that you might have expected, might not behave exactly the way you expect. So, for example, the list 1, 2, 3 is different than the list 3, 2, 1. So it returns false, because it knows that those two are not manifestly the same. And, in fact, whenever you ask it to check the two expressions are equal, it's checking whether or not the sub-expressions are equal. And because these, this one, if we look at the... Interesting. Okay, let's go. So we can also we can build a list out of these lists and check it equal, check it that way. But if we have it in this form, we can also do things like tree form. We can map tree form over that. We'll see that it thinks that's probably not very visible. But we can actually zoom in, and x is just a graph. Okay, so we can see that that structurally they're different, right? 1, 2, 3 versus 3, 2, 1. Okay. Now, same q checks something much stronger than equals. It checks whether or not things are manifestly identical. So if it can't, if it doesn't know whether or not x equals 1, and this is done with a 3 equal sign. So x equals 1, no, it's false. It's not manifestly the same. X is y. False. But it's actually a little bit more, sometimes it might be too strong. It's definitely, it's worth knowing that it's checking a very stringent level of sameness. So, for example, 1 equals, let's just check equals. Let's say 1 equals 1 point. Yes. Those two look the same. Whereas 1, same q, false. Okay? So even though 1 point is defined to arbitrary machine precision to be 1, it's not the same. And the reason why it's not the same is just because the head of 1 is integer, right? Whereas the head of 1 point is real. So they're different objects. And so Mathematica says, no, they're not the same. If you rationalized 1 point, it would give you 1, and then you could check that. And it's not a completely. It's worth bearing in mind that equals as a function also checks some degree of algebraic equality. So if full simplify or simplify can bring them into the same form, sometimes it will say that they're equal even if they do not look manifestly equal. And whereas same q will usually say that they're not. It's somewhat a function of how high priority replacements are in Mathematica. I mean, a good example of this is sine of, let's say sine of pi, same q, zero, says true. And the reason why it says it's true is because if you ask for full form of sine pi, it's zero. It means that the evaluation of sine of pi is so high priority that it beats full form altogether. So whenever Mathematica sees sine of pi, it puts it as zero immediately. And there are lots of examples of that where some operations happen so quickly that that full form doesn't see the structure that we're interested in. Another set of logical tests that are good to become familiar with. The greater than or equal to sign. So in this one, again, we can see that Mathematica thinks of it as greater equal is the name of the function. Or if we got rid of the equal signs and did that, it just said greater. Okay, and then a much more important set of things. I should include the other example. So AND and OR. These ones you probably should become very familiar with seeing. And they check whether or not AND X is true, Y is true, Z is true, and anything else. And they can both, and each of these can take as many arguments as you need. So here are some examples. So this is just telling you the full form. For this, it's much more common to see these double straight lines than OR. But notice this example here. Okay, that's what I wanted there. Let me delete this output. Okay, so something like this. Mathematica does not evaluate this. So you ask, is X less than or equal to Y? And Y is less than X. Now, of course, there's no way for that to be true. And so, a moment's thought will tell you that that's obviously false, that this thing cannot be true and that be true at the same time. But that moment's thought is enough to inform Mathematica that means that by default, Mathematica will just treat it as you wrote it. But it means that if you full simplify it, we'll see, it's false. Okay? So another set of commonly infixed notation are these. If you put the less than followed by the greater than symbol, it joins strings. This is useful if you want to like name files for output or whatnot. And this is another one which is so quickly evaluated that if we didn't put the hold here, let's look at the full form. It tells you the full form of this is the output that we got, the joined string. But if you ask it to hold it, it won't evaluate the sub-expression, the rest of the expression. You'll see that it really is string join is the function involved. And so another very useful one. This one is one that more often than not, you're probably very relieved when you learned about this function. Because if you've ever wanted to check in cases or position or some other functions that we'll see later on, but if you want to see OR for patterns, if you want to check whether or not something is this or it's that or whatnot, alternatives is the function that you want. And so let's say we have some list and we'll say 1, 2, 3, 4, and then A, B, just something, and sine of pi. No, pi is not going to work. Let's do, something like this. And we can ask, we're looking for some cases, and we could say, we'll see. I'll explain more of this notation in a little bit, but you probably are already all familiar with it. So if we ask it for integer, or if we ask it for symbol, it'll tell us those. If we ask it for things that have the head of sign, it'll give us that. But let's say we wanted to have we wanted symbols or integers. We could say integer or symbol, and it'll spit out all the symbols or integers. Which again, we could have equivalently, all of that is the same as saying alternatives, integer, symbol. Okay. So one reason why it's useful to know about the names of these non-infixed forms is because let's say you wanted to you had a list. Let's say you wanted to check a bunch of things, and you had a list of various patterns that you wanted to check, which is not uncommon at all. You could do it this way. You could say alternatives and replace the head of list with alternatives. And so this is a nice way of feeding in you need to know the name of the head to know what to replace it when you use the apply, like Pedro was explaining before. If you want to replace the head of something, you need to know what the head is that you want to replace it with. Okay. So there are also a lot of functions behind the scenes, which you don't see very often, if you want to use apply to replace the head of something, you need to know what head you want to replace it with. So, for example, this full form is list. It thinks of this as a function, it thinks of the arguments 1, 2, 3, 4 as the arguments of this other abstract function, list. Now, list really doesn't have any definition. In fact, Mathematica, it's a completely abstract function. Its only sense of definition is that Mathematica knows to replace curly brackets with that, just like it would replace angle brackets So for example, if I do angle brackets, bracket 1, 2, 3, 4, it'll spit out the angle brackets. But that's really the only sense in which it's a function. Otherwise, it's not defined in any way. And I think it's protected, so you'd have a hard time redefining it. But it might be, locked. I wonder. Let's see. Well, let's check. So let's see how protected the function list is. We can do this by, well, there's another way of doing it, but we'll just do this. So it's attribute locked and protected. So you can't unprotect it without unlocking it as well. And I don't know how to unlock, but I'm sure it's possible. So for some things, like let's say you wanted to redefine times. This is actually relatively common. Like maybe you want to have times behave a little differently on some functions than normal. A lot of people have done things like this to make anti-commuting, operations. But you can do that by unprotecting it and then redefining what times means. But some things are a little harder to redefine. So for example, it's possible if you ask for like pi is it's a constant. It thinks it has some value. It's protected and it's read protected, but you can but it's not locked. So I can redefine pi by unlocking it first and then do it. But if we ask for like I is locked, meaning it's much harder to redefine what I means. Okay, but there's a large class of these structural things which are only really defined for user interface. It's easier for us to put in the curly brackets than it is for us to write out list, slightly. I sometimes still write out list just because it's graphically a little easier to see where the substructures are. But that's the only purpose in life. And notice that things like matrices are just like, let's say we had some matrix. If you played around with some of the notation, let's see if I can remember how it is. So like, let's say we have this. You can input matrices in the standard form if you'd like. So D E F. I don't put matrices in this form usually. Okay. So this is some matrix, and it's thought of as this list of lists. And in fact, if I ask it for full form, it's a list of lists. So lists are very, very common, and it's ahead of a lot of expressions, and it's good to know that. Okay, another very, very, very common bit of notation, which is almost always behind the scenes, is the double square brackets, which we saw a lot of yesterday. And that's equivalent to the function part. And it's a really common kind of first approximation understanding of what the double square brackets is to think of it as like the thing that grabs the jth item of some list. But what it's really doing is just taking the jth part of this function list. And when you think about it that way, it becomes much, it's clear how broad this is. So if we look at some expression like this, just some complicated expression, we can take each of its parts separately, and we can use the double square brackets to get it, or we can use part if we wanted. So the zeroth part is times, because that's the head of this expression. And we can think of this as really being like the address for it. So if we look at like the first part of this is going to be this whole subbit, which is rational 1, 2, 1 over 2. And then the second part is this. And then the first part of the second part is E, and the second part is that. So let's check that. Okay, so the first part is, as we said. And by adding more and more arguments to this, you can dig deeper into the expression and get access to really any sub-expression you'd like. And if you want to know if you want to know the address of a particular thing, you can use position. And so we learned that in this function, one half of this, y is at the 2, 2, 2 position. Okay, so we can ask it for the part 2, 2, 2, or we can ask for 2, 2, 2. Now, so we saw an example of this yesterday. Notice that the return position as a function returns a list of lists. And the reason why is because each list is the address, and it gives you a list of them because if we had multiple instances of y, so if we had multiple instances of y, it would tell you the address for each one of them. Okay, and so now there's one at 2-1. Why is it 2-1? It's because it's the rational part and it's there. Oh, it's not actually. Oh, it's not rational. We'll see. So it's because instead of it doesn't think of 1 over y as rational. It thinks of 1 over y as power. Full form. We'll see that it's power this and power y minus 1. Okay. So it's really useful to know the tree form or the full form because if you want to get access to certain sub-expressions to manipulate them in some way, it's really useful to know how Mathematica is going to reinterpret what you write and how it thinks about it. And another really useful application of this is, okay, so another non-standard form of notation, but one that I use all the time, what Pedro used a lot yesterday, I mean, what a lot of people use all the time, are ways of connecting functions and their arguments. So one of them is very, very common is this prefix notation, which is a symbol at. And if we ask it for full form, you'll see. So we didn't even need to ask it for full form because it's going to write it that way anyway. Okay. And this actually has relatively strong priority. It has weaker priority than this. But one of the weakest possible ways, one of the lowest priority ways of calling a function is this postfix notation, which is to put a double slash and then f. Another bit of postfix notation that we saw already, and it's so common that I didn't even think of including it in this list of examples, are replacements. So if you want to replace something, you want to say a is... I need an arrow. So this little slash dot tells you it is a way of writing the function replace. Okay. So this is just a prefixed form of calling a function. This is postfixed form. Another way that's very 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 useful is apply. And this is great. We already saw some examples of this, but it's so useful, we should review. Okay, so apply chops off the head of some expression and replaces it with whatever you had on the left-hand side. So if we looked at tree form of this list, it's taking the list and spitting out f evaluating. It's replacing the head of, let's look at tree form of the output. Yeah. So now it's the exact same structure, but the head has been replaced with f. But notice that because the head is being replaced, it doesn't matter what the head is. In fact, we could have g of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and it would, and it's still, and it's, so if we were using g instead of list, it wouldn't make any difference. It just takes, so the output of it is just f of that. So I like to think of this apply, the double at sign, as being a way of taking. Well, usually, because it doesn't matter what it is, without loss of generality, we can say it's list. And I like to think of it as a way of taking a list of things and making and feeding those arguments into the slots available for f. So if you have some function of many variables, you can have it. You can take a list of the arguments and put them in the slots this way. You can also do it the other way around. By the way, the sequence of the things of separated by commas is called a sequence. And another way of doing that is to do sequence, to replace the head of list with the head of sequence. And that also does that. So, I mean, these things come up a lot if you have some function of many variables and you want to somehow get several things to it, you can do it. You can use apply. That works great. And another variant of apply, which is really, really useful, is this triple at symbol. And it's just a shorthand for apply at level 1 instead of at level 0, which is the way it normally does. So apply, if we do, it's a, when you have like a list of lists, or I don't know, X, Y, Z or something, doesn't matter. It applies F for each item in the list. And we could call it this way as well. So we can say apply F. And then this list, and at level 1, and it will do the same thing. And if we'd asked it to do it at level 2, it does nothing because there's nothing to apply it to at level 2. And at level 0, it just applies it to the head, which is the same as the double at symbol. Okay. And then a very, very, very useful bit of notation is, or a very, very useful function is map, which is done with this slash at. And we saw it used yesterday. It's going to be used a lot tomorrow. It's just extremely useful. Because what it does is it takes a function and applies it successively to every single item in some list. Or not a list, but in anything. If we did G, it's useful to remember that lists aren't really all that special. They're just an example of a function. So if we had a G, it replaces every single thing at level 1 with F of that thing, with the function applied to it. This is a great way. I mean, this is like it's a more sophisticated. You think of it as a more sophisticated way of table or something. Instead of doing table F of J, you know, 1 to 5, you can do F at range 5, and it will do the same thing. It's certainly a little slicker and more useful. Slash, oh, so the difference between the slash, so notice that this is only replacing, this is an argument, map only works for our functions of one variable, is the main thing. So like, let's say let's check. So let's do F at this. So what it does is it takes everything at level 1, which is, in this case, the first thing is the list, and says F of that list. But that's not the same as the, as up here, where it took, let's. Which, sorry, which line? So we have the app, map with the triple. With just the list, you mean? Mm-hmm. Okay, let's try that. Nope. And the reason why is because it's always going down to level 1, and these things are all at level 0 for. They're at level 1. It goes down to level 1. So, but there are. And if we did 2 ats, we would get F of the whole list. What the triple at is doing is it's doing, the triple at is equivalent to the following. It's equivalent to at mapped through. Okay. So it's doing the ply, which takes the head of something and replaces it, and it's doing it at each item in something, but at level 1. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So things that have heads that can't be removed are called atomic in Mathematica. And things like A, you know, an undefined symbol like A is something for which you can't replace its head. Yeah. Each of the functions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's one way to do that is to make a new function like that, which maps, and then map it onto a list of functions. Okay. So what this is doing is it's doing the map that we wanted, and it's doing it for each of the functions that we have. Do you see? Maybe that was a little too quick. Okay. Let's revisit that maybe in a little bit later. Okay, so how much time do I have left? 10 minutes. Okay, so let me, yeah. I think so. So how would you do that? You would set attributes to n or something and call it. I'm not really sure, but if you look in the Help Documentation Center for attributes, that's what you'd want to change. You want to change the attributes of that symbol. And I think that's possible. You can change it to an integer.
Yeah, integer
Q. Oh, yeah, that's great. So integer Q equals true. So what this is doing is, so if we had integer Q by itself, it says it's false, which is a little surprising because it doesn't actually know if n is an integer or not. If you asked, but you can just define it to be true, and then from then onward, oh no, that doesn't work. That doesn't work. You want to upset the value of, anyway. Yeah. There's assumptions, so you can, but I'm not sure how to do those globally. I don't use them very often myself. So, but all of these things, so these are definitely good things to play around with in the Help Center, in the Documentation Center. So by the way, I didn't give a very good introduction to this Documentation Center, but let's just use this as an example. So if we look at assumptions in the Help Center, it tells you what it is, it defines what it is. It's used for things like simplify, refine, integrate, so it doesn't look like it's a global thing. Global assumptions. Oh, this thing, yeah, that, which is it's got the dollar sign, which means it's some global parameter defined in this session. But it's a global setting for things like simplify, refine, integrate. And you can always, so for anything in the Documentation Center, like we're gonna look at block later. I didn't click on it. So one of the functions we're gonna see in just a moment is block. And you can read about it here, and it will give you all the details about how it's defined. It will give you all the subtleties about it. And then it will also give you examples of how it works. And it will even bring up possible issues, possible conflicts with other functions, otherwise. So things like, how do I change the attributes? If you look up the attributes, if you looked up the word attributes, I think you might be able to find out how to do that. But I don't know off the top of my head. Okay, so I only have a brief little bit of time left, and so what I really, my goal is just to give you like a list of some of the most useful functions in Mathematica. So these are ones that and I'll try to give examples of a few of the most important ones. Basically the forms and structures that should be part of your daily vocabulary, or that are really, really useful. Things that you should, you know, when you go to bed, you should bring, make sure you have your printout from Help, the Documentation Center, for all these things. Okay, so patterns. We've already seen a lot of examples of these. And so when you see the structure of x underscore y, it means it's a single length pattern of arbitrary complexity named, which is going to be called x. That's optional. It's not strictly speaking necessary to name it. It's only if you want to use it somewhere else. And it has a head of y. So for example, this is the difference between I have this complicated example here. So let me just define some random matrix, and we can look at it. So it's just some matrix that happens to be one of the things that occurs in BCFW. Just some random example. Okay. And if we wanted to pull out, like, cases is a function that is also very, very useful. So if we look for all the cases of underscore alpha, it looks for all the parts of the matrix which have the head of alpha. Okay, so there are a lot of them. Notice that it's also including duplicates. Alpha 11 is there, and it's there too. And the reason is because it occurs twice. It's there and it's there. Okay, and similarly, if we had asked for all the integer, it would give you all those things. Or you can say, what about alpha for something that has a head of integer? That's the same as what we had before, but if we changed any of these arguments to say x, now now its head is a symbol. So it won't give you that list. Okay. And so one of the common things that I like to do, I usually define a function called nice, which is a global function, but because of this session, I haven't loaded anything. I don't have it defined here. But which usually makes things matrix form with lots of little things like making a function of a, with a small head, like alpha, and rewriting it as subscript, which is kind of nice. Okay? And but notice, and notice that we could also have written it this way. We could say x, whose head is alpha. But now we've named it. And because we've named it, so if we just did this, oh, that we need to name it. Okay. So if we did this, it, notice that it does alpha subscript alpha. And the reason is because it's taking the full expression. It doesn't chop off the head when you it doesn't remove it from the pattern. And so if you want to do the same thing as the line above, we need to take the first element of that instead of the zeroth. If we did the zeroth, notice it would just give us alpha sub alpha everywhere. Okay? Which is a little funny. Okay. So some important variations on this theme. So if you have two underscores, this is, it's maybe not apparent, but there are two underscores. This is an arbitrary length pattern, something which can have as many slots in it as you'd like. And if you have three of them, So I'm just going to list most of these things. Something with three underscores is an arbitrary length pattern that's possibly empty. Doesn't need to have, it can be zero length. But basically the same structure. Another useful thing to know is this underscore colon. So, and that means it's a default. So, for example, if we say, you know, my function x, and then we say that 10, let's say it's like x squared. Okay, so this is the function we've defined, and if we ask my function with no argument, it gives us 100, because it says that if it doesn't get an argument, it's going to assume that x is 10. Whereas if you give it anything else, it just squares it. So a very simple function. Okay? And another very useful thing is a pattern, is this question mark thing. So question mark is useful for calling help, but it also, it converts any function that you might have into a test, any test function you might have into a pattern. So, for example, we had this cases matrix that had that, you know, the form x alpha, and it gave us all of those things. Oh, I don't need the, you know, of course, the x there was irrelevant. And if I asked it for integers, it would. Okay, I didn't need to name the pattern. But I can ask it for x, for patterns x that meet this criteria. And this is, so this test function just says, is it greater than 10? Okay, so. Great, so it only spits out those. Okay, pure functions. You can define a function just by listing x, y, z, and then some function of x, y, z. We can say x times y times z. Okay, and this is a pure function which we can then give arguments like we would any other function. We can also do the at symbol to do that. Oops. No, it's a function of three variables, so it doesn't know what to do with a list. You need to give it the at for apply. Okay, and then this is equivalent to a slightly more abstract. I don't need to do that. Okay, good. Now, a slightly more abstract way of doing this. The important thing of a pure function is that it's a function which is only defined in Mathematica temporarily. It's not stored in memory. It doesn't have a name. It's just some function, which makes it really great for things like this pattern test and things like that, where you could define a new function that says is something greater, is x, you could say, greater than 10. You could define this function equals, x greater than 10, and then call it here, but it's a little bit excessive. You can do it much easier that way. And so another way of, instead of using function, which is spelling the whole thing out, you can also just have anything involving this pound sign, and then followed by an ampersand. And this thing represents a pure function, which can be given arguments as any other function would be. It can be mapped over things, like we saw before. And if you want to have a function of multiple variables, you can just call that, well, first, if we just put a 1 there, it's the first argument of 1, so it doesn't do anything. But we can have a function of multiple variables, this way. We call each of the variables a different name. And then we can... Okay. Why did I put the extra? I put the extra list on it because it's the triple at wants to eat a list of lists, right? A, B, C. So it's going to say, see what it's doing? Okay. So just I'm just going to list these and not even give examples because I'm out of time. I'll mention them tomorrow. But probably only very briefly. This notebook is going to go online, and I would encourage you just to go through this. It's just a list of some of the most useful functions. If you look over this list and you're not already familiar with some of them, like for example, select is one of the most useful functions in Mathematica. Everybody should know and love select because it's wonderful. If you don't, look it up, familiarize yourself with it. If you're not familiar with blocks and modules, you know, read the debate. There's a great blocks compared with modules. There's a big discussion about it. So you can just look over this notebook, and if you're not familiar with any of the functions, you know, give a few minutes and read through the documentation center on them, because they're really, these are like my favorite functions. Okay. Great. Thank you. Well, we have 4 hours in the afternoon for questions, so...